的经文让大伯的大伯藏起下次点吧地伯的下伯女点点吧起伯卡路吉伯拉南米伯拉藏东伯藏起中间地伯吉伯大伯拉中的龙就都叫藏起中间地地间下伯的中伯用大伯的你日巴当小子天巴地巴热女天天巴吉巴德巴卡拉纳米巴拉当巴南吉当吉中天地巴热亚德巴拉中德龙就都叫上吉中天地地上小巴这中巴用德巴热德巴上吉小子天巴地巴热小巴女天德巴卡路吉巴拉纳米巴马南吉东巴藏吉中天地巴热小吉德巴拉中德叫声吉吾苏吾就等地萨坚德拉贡巴登布热阿那女丹德那叫吉松地斯比巴就拉修南德刚阿叫德一起将祖自己浪布热照巴女丹阿弥巴贡布就女吉拉修陈昭天巴追灭德比加热森顿这巴就拉修德这兄者斯巴斯芒吉娘命将近就拉修蒙布德吉吉天巴当今见别同巴宋南为用的将子吉地间就拉兄德特别多叫这巴吉日比文恩记得东丹走吉日巴吉吉日吉拉修祝你祝我浪漫祝你喇叭到达先歌当把用点点变得那样有爱情给我把咱们都把这些让歌咱们的得你总记当把用干嘛绕着满米就嘛做我的结果的动嘛那我老动真的这些就那么的大人从那么的一当局的把一公布的兄弟扎的人的各种和他们这个四分子都把主人有
Start first of all by adjusting your motivation and think that you're here to receive the most profound and expansive teachings of the Mahayana. The reason why you ask the teacher to give these teachings to you is so that you are capable of benefiting countless sentient beings who have been your mothers in the past and are experiencing various types of suffering are as vast as the vastness of space. For their sake, you aspire to reach the perfect of ultimate happiness, the unsurpassable state of perfect and complete enlightenment, which is characterized by the full development of every possible quality and the total elimination of every trace of negativity. So for the sake of all sentient beings, you are here today to receive these teachings. With that thought in your mind, please adjust your motivation and adapt a mental attitude that is suitable for this occasion. Now just bring into your mind that all the activities of the Buddhas have been always towards the benefit of sentient beings. In the beginning, when they entered the path of the Great Vehicle, they generated the mind of bodhicitta solely for the sake of sentient beings. They uplifted their minds to the state of generating great love and compassion for others for the sake of sentient beings. That was the beginning. In the middle, they spent three countless eons amassing the two types of accumulation of merit and primordial awareness. And at the end, they reached the state of perfect and complete enlightenment in order to serve sentient beings. And all the activities that follow after the manifestation of the state of enlightenment, such as the turning of the wheel of Dharma and engaging in the act of teaching, it was solely done for the purpose of benefiting others. When we talk about turning the wheel of Dharma and when we talk about teachings, you need to understand that we're talking about a great variety of different teachings, different lengths that were given according to different trainees at different times. The first turning of the wheel of Dharma was said to be given at Varanasi, and it was the one where in the occasion of teaching the Four Noble Truths. Following this, we had the second turning of the wheel of Dharma that took place in Vulture's Peak, where the Prajnaparamita text, the perfection of wisdom, was expounded. Following that, we had the third turning of the wheel of Dharma. So in every one of those turning of the wheel of Dharmas, in every occasion of teachings, a number of teachings that can fall under the category of sutras and tantras well proclaimed. If we look at the situation in the world today, we have to recognize that we have a great variety of religious and philosophical systems. And in most religions, we find that the main theme is how to achieve happiness, how to eliminate suffering. Understanding that there are different types and different degrees of suffering, all religions try to give advice on how to avoid that and how, on its place, to establish different amounts and different types of happiness. Now, we cannot make a distinction and say that some religious systems are better than others. This would be quite wrong from our own tribe. What we have to understand is that in some systems we find more extensive and more detailed presentation than in other systems. This is not to be taken as a means for criticizing the different religious systems. What we have to understand is that according to the needs of the trainees, sometimes more extensive explanations were offered, and at other times it was more appropriate to give something which was more condensed and more easy to work with.
Ojida dinda yinda yindu, ojida chuli kongka ka nani yajida, namba sanji wa mara ju, sanji chumdeen di ka mara sanja ka di, yang drishi ju manju yindi ngi. Ojida kredan ju, riri ni mara ju, tondi sabo misa na, tondi sabo yangya ka chita, kwe manda wa mambu goni mara tenja ka yindi ngi. Yang kaji ka sanju nana, ju shimji mambu shingi ka kansa la,
If we look into Buddhism, we see that the tendency is to give as detailed an explanation as possible. But again, that would have to be modified according to the needs of the trainees. One thing that seems to be unique maybe in Tibetan Buddhism is that a lot of analogies are used. When the meaning is difficult to understand, in order to clarify that and in order to put that across in a way that will make it easier for the trainees to grasp it, then a lot of examples and analogies are given. It's not only that, but also quite a lot of reasoning is given. So by using these analogies and various types of reasonings, hopefully the most difficult points will be elaborated and will be broken up, open up, so that people can understand them. And again, according to the capacity of those who are receiving the teachings, sometimes it will be more elaborate and sometimes they will be simpler and more condensed.
Aji da din la yin ba yin du ji da lo yin na ngo yin na ka ba yin na ma ji ji lam di sam si ji din da ge chong wen ngo ni ma sa yang ge wa ri cha jin da ma sa na ba pe na ji mu si ma tu tian sa yin na ji pe na ji sa ge li ka li ni da zo da ba na ji yin na wa ji li ka li ni ji yin na yang ji ma gong ga lan cha ji ri ri ma zong ne ji cha ji la yang ren ba ma mu yo wa ri wa ji lo ji gen cha ji lo ni gen cha ji lo sam gen cha ji
Yang juga cari jalan baru, tambah tu sana cuma orang cari jual. Orang tu tinggal di bawah yang tu cari jual sejati lah. Mungkin juga macam tu yang juga ni. Di samping cari jual mana, ni tu semua yang bayar bayar tu nampak sangat jual. Yang tu cari jual sejati lah. Cari jual di mungkin juga cuma yang lain. Di mungkin dia juga cerita tafsir dia buat jadi tafsir yang ni, orang cerita jadi yang ni. Mungkin orang, orang tu mungkin orang ya dia lah jadi tambah ni, kau tu tambah dah, tu tambah ni. Berapa nak jual? Cari jual dia lah, mungkin cuma cikgu macam dia tangan ni, dia kaji gua buat apa? Dia nampak, jalan di semua si. Di sana dia yang bayar tu.
我觉得他今年的人都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都是年轻人，他们都
And very important thing that we need to stress when we give a short presentation of Buddhism is that we always must understand three basic things. And those three things is, first of all, a basis, and then it's the path, and finally is the result. Now, even if you're doing an ordinary job, let's say you're working in a factory, now you will understand that some planning always needs to be in place. First of all, you set your goals, and then you make a plan. You have to have a plan of production, a plan of how to achieve the goals that you have set. And it's very useful to have short-term plans and long-term plans, because you set your goal and you say, let's say I want to achieve this within 1 year. I must have a complete plan for completing every goal that I have within 1 year. But if that doesn't work, I can have the 2-year plans, I can have the 3-year plan, and so on and so forth. Now, before you start engaging actually in such a production, it would be very useful to have something as a basis to work with, and your basis would be some sort of money that you have as a capital. Using that and understanding what sort of method you will need to employ, you will make a plan to see how you can achieve your goal. Now, a very similar thing, very practical steps we have to apply on our practice. We need, first of all, to set a goal, and that goal is the ultimate goal, reaching the state of enlightenment. In order to reach that goal, we need to follow a path, and that path includes amassing the two accumulations of strong understanding of the ultimate truth and the relative truth. Now, we also have one verse from Aryanagarjuna, who's actually illustrating this point very clearly. Although the verse comes from a dedication prayer, it really refers to the basis, the path, and the result. And he says, through the merit that I have amassed, through my two accumulations, may I reach the two bodies of the Buddha. So when Aryanagarjuna is mentioning here the two accumulations, he's talking about accumulation of merit and wisdom. Now, although directly we're talking about the two accumulations, what is understood behind that is a thorough understanding of the two levels of truth. Because once you understand the two, the ultimate and the relative truth, then you can see how you can engage in the accumulation of method and wisdom. And by following that path, you can see how you can attain the two bodies of the Buddha, the form body and the wisdom body of the Buddha, which is the actual result. So always make clear what is your goal, how you're going to achieve this goal, what is the path, and what is the basis upon which you have to rely in order to get there. Now, whether you practice in sutra or whether you practice in tantra, it is very important from the beginning to recognize what is your goal, how you are going to reach that goal by following certain paths, and what is the basis you have to rely upon. Recognizing those things and being clear about those is very important. And as we say, it's also important to make a short and a long-term plan of achieving those things. Now, before we gave a quotation from Aryanagarjuna, and now Rinpoche was quoting the great Lama Tsongkhapa. Here we have a quotation that comes at the end, actually. We have the Lamrim dedication prayer, is one verse from there. And it's referring more into the tantric practices. I can't recite it exactly as it is, but more or less it says, may I be able to complete the stages of sutra and after that cross the ocean of tantra. So there is a mention there of engaging in the tantric vehicle. Now, when we talk about the sutric practices, sometimes we refer to that as the causal vehicle, and when we refer to the tantric practices, we use an alternative name, which is called the resultant vehicle. According to the vehicle that we would choose to practice, and according to the aim that we will set, we will have to follow slightly different paths, slightly different methods, and that will result in slightly different final results. So if you see, the ultimate results, when we reach the state of enlightenment through the practice of Tantra, then we do that by reaching the enlightened being in the aspect of Vajradhara, of Dorje Chang. Whereas if we do it by following a sutric path, the final result of the state of enlightenment would be a Buddha in the usual aspects such as Buddha Shakyamuni and so forth. Because we follow different paths and because we use different methods, the final aspect of the result will also differ.
Rinpoche
here was referring to the different collections of texts that we have, and here we're talking about texts that have been translated from the original Sanskrit words back into Tibetan. We mentioned the great Lama Tsongkhapa, and since we mentioned the Lamrim, it's important to understand how that fits within the collection of texts that we have. Now, when we're talking about translated texts from that were composed by the Indian scholars into Tibetan, first of all, we have a collection of texts that is called the Kangyur. The Kangyur actually includes about 101 texts, including one volume, which is the index of all the texts that are translated. Now, these are works that have been translated from Sanskrit into Tibetan, but if we look at the texts that have been translated into Chinese, there's actually a larger number than that. If we look at the type of text that we have within the Kangyur, it is said that most of those texts actually are sutric texts. The tantric texts are the minority, are very few. within those 101 volumes. Another thing that has been translated into Tibetan was a number of commentaries. And these were commentaries, again, that were composed by the great Indian scholars and pandits. And this collection of translation of commentaries is called the Tengyur. The Tengyur consists of about 225 volumes. This is what has been translated, again, from Sanskrit into Tibetan. If we look at how much has been translated into Chinese, again, is much more. It's about 300 or even more. And when talking about the great Lama Tsongkhapa and his composition of the various lengths of the Lam Rim, the extensive, the middle, the more condensed, these are texts that are found within these collections. Now, as we mentioned, there were texts that were translated into Tibetan, but there were also texts translated into Chinese, texts translated into Mongolian. And these days, of course, we have the process of translating a lot of those texts of the Tengyur and the Kangyur into Western languages. Although there is not a great number of texts that have already, or commentaries that have been translated, let's say in English or French, the dominant languages, still we have the Lam Rim texts already translated. We have a number of short commentaries. We have a number of texts to work with. And these are not texts only from the new traditions, but also they are texts from the Kagyu tradition, from the Sage tradition, the Nyingma tradition, and so forth. Of course, there's still a long way to go with these translations. As I said, the Buddhist teachings originally appeared in the Holy Land of India, and after that they started spreading. Initially they spread to the south of India, and then they started spreading up to the north of India in places like Tibet, Mongolia, China. And then there was this particular prophecy saying that 5,500 years after the teachings first originated in India, the teachings of the Buddha would spread into the land of the red-faced people. And there are different ways of interpreting, of course, that particular quotation. Some people say that the red-faced ones are the Mongolians, but there are others who would say that the red face actually refers to European and then Western people as a whole, Western from Europe as well. Now, as for the way that the teachings spread, let's look into Tibet, into China, and also into other countries. That's a model to keep in mind. Initially, there is usually a first wave of the teachings, and they come across very nice and very clear, but you have to be aware that there are always great obstacles. when teachings are spreading into a new land. So although the teachings might initially reach a place, there is always the possibility that there are many obstacles and the teachings might deteriorate. So there might be a renewal of effort for reviving teachings and always effort to spread the teachings into places where they have not reached. And Rinpoche was saying, look at what happens to ordinary people, how their status can change. You start as somebody who is poor, you work really hard, you get to the top, you accumulate wealth, you get a high status, and then what happens? You start losing all of it again. So your decline, after you reach the peak, decline happens, and a similar thing happens with the spreading of the teachings. The teachings go through different phases. And sometimes they're on the high, and sometimes they seem to be on the declining side. And although the case with material wealth is that other people can easily observe, let's say, your rise and then your decline, when we're talking about those things internally, we're talking about the wealth of Dharma. And this is a process that takes place in our own minds. It's a very private business in one way. When we talk about the wealth of Dharma, we are talking about view and we're talking about contact. And we should all make the great effort to increase those things as much as possible. And it's only ourselves who would know the condition, the riches that we have or the riches that we are lacking within our own minds. We should always try to enrich our minds. We should always try to develop whatever little good qualities we have to increase those as much as possible. And if there are qualities that we're missing, we should try to generate them anew. If we know that there is negativity, we should try to eliminate it as much as possible. And this enrichment of our minds is, as we say, something absolutely private. It is not like enjoying, it's not like moving into a bigger house, having a better car, having better clothes, eating better food that other people will more or less immediately be aware of. This is an inner change, an inner wealth. Now these days, wherever you look, whether you look at the East, whether you look at the West, we're all experiencing this incredible material progress. If you look everything, our factories, our technology, our telecommunication, the way that we move from one place to the other, we can all experience this incredible increase, this progress that, it's unstoppable almost. But when we talk about internal progress, when we look at the way that our minds have changed through our practices, then it's worthwhile to actually ask the question how much peace, how much happiness we have established within our own minds. It's worthwhile to ask the question whether peace, both externally but as well as internally, is increasing or not. Because it's very important to understand that it is exactly through those practices that we can bring about the inner development that everybody is looking for. Now, having come to this point, it's also very important to see that when we talk about enemies and demons, those things can be understood in two levels, the external one and the internal one. And it's very easy to identify external enemies. We see that there is so much war and so much conflict just because people or different groups are trying to subdue or completely eliminate their enemies. And the question is whether the external enemy is the real one. Now, the answer to that is that it's really always the internal enemy, the internal demon, that is the most important one. The enemy always lies within, and our main enemy is the three main afflictions: our attachment, our hatred, and our confusion. The fact that we hold ourselves to be far more important than anybody else. The fact that we tend to ignore the needs of others. The fact that we find ourselves having more and more needs, increasing every day, demanding things every day. Understanding that this is the inner enemy, it would be very good to try to eliminate that enemy, to wage a war against this enemy and try to defeat it using as many means as we seem to be capable of employing when we are facing external enemies. We should try to eliminate the inner enemy, and we should know that at times we have to apply peaceful means, and if we see that those are not working and there is no result that is achieved, we have to use much more wrathful and much more stronger and aggressive means in order to eradicate those. It's Buddha Shakyamuni that has actually summarized this in two lines where it says, I am my own enemy and I am my own teacher. Now, if you don't know how to think, if you don't know how to recognize the inner enemy within yourself, then you end up supporting this inner enemy. And what you do is you become your own enemy. You become the enemy of your own self. if you can recognize what the true enemy is, and if you decide that you want to eliminate the power of that negativity, if you decide that you want to reduce it as much as possible, then you become your own teacher. You don't need to rely on an external teacher if you can recognize what are the faults within yourself. So according to the way you think, you can turn to the best teacher for yourself, or you can turn to the worst enemy that you could ever face. Rinpoche was saying, you know, we have all these enemies inside our own minds. We have our delusions, we have our attachment, our hatred, we have our confusion. And if you decide to take up the arms against those enemies, it would be good to be very forceful. We have all seen all these images in our television screens of how, the troops think that in certain caves in Afghanistan there might be Al-Qaeda fighters, and what they do is they bomb this cage. You know, I think they completely destroy it. So if you think you have located the enemy inside, then bring about total destruction like this. And the problem with that is that if you can actually recognize the enemy, if the enemy is obvious, then the fight is easy. But what happens is that many times the enemy is hiding within. So in the case where you have enemies hiding within the caves of your mind, it's much more difficult to wage the war if you don't have the obvious enemy. And we have this particular term that we use, the four destroyer, and we can apply this to hearers, to solitary realizers, but also to Buddha, where he is called, the Buddha is called the great four destroyer. In Sanskrit, we use the term arhat for that. Now, somebody becomes a four destroyer once they have destroyed their enemies. And here, the enemies is understood to be always the inner enemy, the person who has taken up the fight with their mental afflictions and has overcome, has defeated all those, have reached the stage, the status of an arhat, of a four destroyer. Now, whether one is practicing sutra or whether one is practicing tantra, the main thing to bring about is to establish one's own peace of mind. And in order to establish this inner peace, what you need to do is to identify who is the enemy of your peace. And once you see that it is your mental afflictions, your attachment, your aversion and ignorance, once you identify those things as being the enemy, then you have to go straight ahead and eliminate those. If you can get rid of those who are disturbing your peace, then it would be much easier for you to establish peace within your mind. And the person who has defeated the inner enemies, the person who has established inner peace, is the one who has destroyed all the enemies, is the one who has become a four destroyer. So the real purpose of engaging in any practice, whether it is sutric or tantric, is really to change the mind and bring about this peace that we're looking for. Now, as we said before, it's very important to identify what is your goal. And in this case, the goal is to eliminate the inner enemies, to completely eliminate attachment, aversion, ignorance, any other state of mental afflictions. The more you are overcoming these enemies, the more you are establishing the state of inner peace. This is your goal, and in order to reach there, you need to identify the practices, in other words, the path you will be following, and also the basis from which you will begin. Now, we explain those within the context of sutra, but there is also a particular understanding and a particular explanation of those three things when we're talking about the practice of tantra. Again, the goal is the same, but it will be achieved in a slightly different way. Now, as I say, once we enter into the sutric path, we say that the goal is to reach the state of enlightenment in the aspect of the Buddha. And in order to do that, we need to amass the two accumulations of merit and wisdom. But this takes a very, very long time. It takes three countless great eons. So first of all, you have to go through the first countless great eon of accumulating merit and wisdom. You finish that, you start with the second countless great eon. You finish with that, you start with the third countless great eon. And only after you come at the end of that, which we're talking about millions of years, you can say that you have completed the path and you will reach the state of enlightenment. So as you can see, it's a very, very long path. What happens in the practice of Tantra? It is said that, first of all, those who will enter into this path will have to be trainees of very sharp mental faculties. It would also have to be people who have a great collection of merit, of great karma. And as they have that, they will engage in various aspects of method and wisdom, which will have to be very, very extensive. And due to that, the time that it will take for them to complete the path will be much faster. It is said that the slowest, the worst tantric practitioner would be capable of completing the path and reaching the state of perfect enlightenment within 16 lifetimes. Those who are not, who are a bit better than that will be able to do it within 7 or 8 lifetimes. And finally, the supreme amongst the best will be able to achieve full enlightenment within one single lifetime.
我觉得应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应该应
Just to give you an analogy, right, to understand how slow things can be and how we can speed them up. Now, bring your mind back to the time where we didn't have any automobiles. Where if you wanted to go from A to B, you would have to walk, which would take months. Now, after a while, people tamed horses and were able to ride, which made the traveling a little bit faster, but still, it was quite long. And after that, eventually, we came to the era of having cars or having railways, which made traveling much faster. And these days, we are flying. It takes a few hours, whereas before, it would have taken months and years to cover the same distance. Now, the same thing with communication, right? Sending letters. In the past, you just had to write your letter, put it in the envelope, send it through the post, and just wait for that letter to be delivered. It would take some time. Then after a while, the era of the fax came about. Everybody started faxing things. And these days, we are emailing, which is instant communication. So you can see, we can make things much faster if we rely on different methods. So the goal is always the same, to reach a state of enlightenment, to become enlightened in the aspect of Vajradhara. But the means and the methods that we're going to employ can be different, and because these are different, the time within which we will achieve the ultimate goal can be much faster. Now, an interesting thing that we need to discuss here within the tantric practice is actually deity meditation, or the yoga of the deity that we practice. Within sutra, you never transform yourself to the deity. You might visualize the deity in the space in front of you, you make prayers, you make offerings, but you do not transform yourself to the deity. This is a unique aspect of tantric practices. When we talk about deity meditation in tantra, you visualize, you transform yourself into the deity. So you see your body, you see your speech, you see your mind having become the divine body, divine speech, divine mind of the deity. And it starts as something that you imagine, but gradually as you receive the blessings, the transformation is taking place. So you see, again, the basis is an understanding of the two levels of truth, ultimate and relative. Again, the path would be the accumulation of method and wisdom. And again, the result would be to achieve the two bodies of the Buddha, form body and wisdom body. But the difference here lies on the fact that we're using different methods by transforming ourselves completely into the aspect of the deity, the path becomes much faster. Now there is one particular verse that Rinpoche was quoting here that is saying, reaching the state of Dorje Chang is due to the great kindness of relying on Guru Yoga. This is the one that allows me to accumulate swiftly what otherwise would have taken me countless eons to complete. And the meaning of the verses again illustrates that the ultimate goal is to reach the state of enlightenment in the aspect of Vajradhara. And we do that by relying on this particular method, the unique method that we have in Tantra, which is the meditation on the deity, this particular type of a yoga, of the yoga we do. If we were not following that particular path, we would have to follow other methods that would take three countless great eons, a very long time to complete. So it is due to the kindness of those particular methods that we can complete it swiftly and quickly. As we say, the worst trainee can do it within 16 lifetimes. A middle capacity trainee can do it in half that duration, about 8 lifetimes. The best ones can do it within one short lifetime. So it's not really a matter of saying that sutra is too slow, criticizing sutra and praising tantra. What we're saying is that due to differences of methods, there is a difference in the time that it takes to complete the path. The methods that we are utilizing in tantra are very subtle and very vast, and this is what brings about the difference. Now, also the important thing is that when we talk about practices of Tantra, and we are also talking about empowerment within that, all those things are understood in three different occasions or three different levels: the time of the basis, the time of the path, and the time of the result.
Now,
Now, when we talk about the basis, the path, and the result, this, as we say, can be explained in different ways within sutra, within tantra. Now, within this particular presentation, we say the basic thing we need to understand is that within the minds of any one of the six types of migrators, everybody has what is called the capacity, the potential to become a fully developed Buddha. In other words, everybody possesses Buddha nature. Now, this is the basis from where we start. Now, once you understand that you possess such a capacity to develop into that degree, it is very important to apply a lot of effort into your practices. And this is where the path comes into picture. Now, our efforts into practicing, the effort that we put in improving ourselves, the effort that we put into meditating is actually the path that we follow. Once you understand the basis, you understand that you have to exert yourself. And the reason for that is that if you look, for example, at a seed has a great potential for giving you flowers, a whole tree, and so forth. But unless the seed meets with the right conditions, such as the earth and the water and the fertilizer and the right temperature, it will not produce anything despite its great potential. So the same thing with us. Despite having the great potential, it is still very important for us to put the effort through following the path. And finally, we reach a state of result, which, as we described, is the state of Vajradhara. Now, really, when we're talking about the basis of Tantra, what we're talking about is a combination of mind and wind. And of course, we have different types of mind and different types of winds. And here, we're talking about the most subtle mind and the most subtle wind. It is exactly this most subtle mind and wind, the combination of those two things, that carries the potential for us to become enlightened. Buddha nature is the combination of those two things. And then we have to follow the path. And here, when we talk about the path, we're actually following about five different tantric paths. The tantric path of accumulation, tantric path of preparation, tantric path of seeing, tantric path of meditation, tantric path of normal learning. And at the end of that, we reach the state of Vajradhara, where we have established the form body and the wisdom body of that enlightened being. This presentation of the basis, the path, and the result is something which is very, very important. Whether you're going to follow sutric practices or whether you're going to follow tantric practices is something that you have to get clear straight from the beginning. First of all, you have to identify what is your goal. And after you identify your goal, you have to know what is the path that will take you there. In other words, what are the methods that you need to follow? What are the methods you need to rely upon in order to reach that particular result that you have chosen? You choose your goal and then you stay focused on that for as long as it takes. You're very clear about what is the basic understanding, what is your basic capacity, the basis upon which you will develop all this practice. At all times, whether you're practicing sutra, whether you're practicing deity meditation within tantra, you have to be very clear about those three things. Tonight, Rinpoche gave a short introduction of those things, and in the remaining sessions tomorrow and the day after, there will be a slightly more elaborate explanation of those things, of those matters. So it's about 9:15 now, and we have about 14, 15 minutes of questions, if there are any.
What is the difference between the Buddha Vajradhara and the Buddha ordinary Buddha? What actually
does the
Buddha Vajradhara do with this?
Yeah. Anyway, Jenna, dōrchī tāngi kōpān tōpnā yā, tāng chī tāngi sāngi kī kōpān tōpā yā, tēnī lā kēpār kārē dōsā, dōrchī tāng lā mīksal kārē yōrē sā.
Ārē, tā dōrchī tāng lā tāngi shūyā nā jirī, chakūn chakū jī tōpā yā gā, tēnī nāng jū kōm yā tī, dōsā kā mā tā wā, nīr chī kī jī wā rā wā, tī āngbū nōmbū sū jī chēn, mā sāngi yā nā tī yāng yā mī tīngi, jī chēn kāng kā, Li karma go jijin tukding, tab jia qianbu jijin tukding, shirab jia qianbu jijin tukding, di namjir go jijin tukding, di ra gongan zumba yi na, njokbu tukga yin giwa yi. Nduwa la nambi nani nduwa tang, mishik mandir ka nani ya, nduwa yi na, njokbu 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 rwa, di nani.
You know, Yorimbo Chola, di sangi ki gona kebar yore wa, dulsa ki gona kebar yore sa.
Tōshā gō gōni chibarī wā mā rī dī dārshī lāṃ dō tāṅgī jāg lō tāṅ tāpshī sāṃ sō gō gōni chibarī wā rī.
Well, there is nothing that, let's say, Buddha Vajradhara can do better than you know, the remaining Buddhas. So there is no difference from the point of view of what is attained. The difference is on how that thing is attained and on who is attaining what. So, as I say, it is actually the result that you will achieve, that will be achieved, depends on the type of practitioner. If we're talking about a sharp faculted practitioner, then probably this person is going to engage into the tantric path. And in order to do that, they must have a certain vastness of karma, they must have a certain vastness of method, and a certain vastness of wisdom. And these three things combined together will make them finish the path pretty quickly. The only difference between the state of Vajradhara and the state of another Buddha is that the state of Vajradhara, when it is reached very quickly by somebody who is very sharp. That's the difference. The type of person who reaches the state of Vajradhara is like the type of person who can go and purchase an airplane ticket, and they can get there within hours where they want to go. If you're not this type of a person, it will take you hours, it will take months to reach where you go. You know, you'll try to fly, you won't be able to fly. You try to get on the car, on the bus, you won't get a seat on the bus. You try to, you know, go by horse, it will take very long. Finally, you'll have to walk there, so it will take long. That's the difference. And your second question?
The second one was, is fixing existence itself a basic requirement for producing fruit, so that it's cyclical existence brings to an end?
Yes, you know, theoretically it's exactly like this. We need to have cyclic existence in order to reach the state of Buddhahood. But don't worry about it, because although we say that one day it will be empty, practically for each one of us, this will not happen. Because for each human being that you have billions and millions of insects, for example, right? Not to mention other types of sentient beings. So considering the suffering they are experiencing, we will be busy for a very long time. So all of us will have some basis for accumulating merit. Yes.
It's obvious to me that I don't have a helicopter to the Concord, so I'm not like one of those people on a really fast track, but how do I figure out sort of where I am and what's the best way for me to get where I
want to
go?
And
how do I personally, or any other person, take on that?
Yeah, Rinpoche, I'm going to tell you, helicopter yomares, nantu yomares. Inna ya. So, ta mire reiki, ta nga chokpo joyens, yame na nga delmo joyens, kandis hako sares, kandis tacho iresa. You don't need to have a helicopter to get to enlightenment, all right? What you need to do is to put some effort into that. This, your effort will take you where you want to go. If you really generate that thought within your mind, saying, I want to reach there as quickly as possible, it's as if you have this mental helicopter we're talking about, right? So it's your sense of urgency and your effort that would get you in that fast track very quickly. You reach the state of Vajradhara in no time. Now, as we said, you start with the resources that you have, and you say, okay, let's make a plan. How am I going to reach where I want to go? And as I say, make a long-term plan, and if you think that this is too long, start reducing it. I say, suppose I want to reach there in 5 years. What would I have to do? If that's too much, think, okay, no, 5 years is too long. I want to do it within 3 years. What should I do to get there within 3 years? So make a plan according to what you want to reach and according to what you have right now in front of you. It's the same like going shopping, right? There are all sorts of things with different prices in the shops. Now, you don't buy without checking how much money you have in your wallet, right? Maybe there is something that is very nice and very expensive, but you check and you don't have the money. So you say, okay, I can't afford it right now. Let's get something else, something cheaper. Yeah.
Sakini said that delusion is one of the evils.
Uh-huh.
When we're transforming ourselves to the deities, to our deities, whatever they are, is that delusion?
Now the thing is that we need to be very accurate with those things. there is something in our minds that is transformed into the divine state, but this is not the three poisons. This is not our delusions. Delusions need to be completely eliminated. You don't transform them, you completely eliminate them. Now, as you eliminate them, you transform your mind, you transform whatever is left, if you take out the negativity. And you need to be very thorough, so you need to address every part of your mind that might be supporting and helping in any possible way those mental afflictions, because those things also would either have to be completely eradicated or very, very radically changed. So delusions you completely eliminate. You don't change them. Now, when we talk about the three afflictions, such as attachment and hatred and confusion, we say we need to eliminate those, but this is not going to happen overnight. You, first of all, you find out how much of that you have, and you try to reduce it. If it's of large size, you know, very, very, very big, very heavy, you try to somehow, you know, reduce it, let's say, to a middle size, and then from the middle size, you try to put it down to a smaller size, until it comes to a size that you can say, okay, now I can see how I can eliminate it. Elimination, total elimination, doesn't happen overnight. Now, this is going to be the case for most of us. Now, for some supreme trainees who have reached very high levels of the path, then for them, it is possible to bring about transformation rather than having to eliminate them. But this, we have to stress, is going to be the exception of trainees. So there are some special paths that instead of eliminating attachment, for example, they bring about attachment as something to be utilized in the path. But this is an exception, only for those who have reached very, very high levels of realization. The rest of us will have to eliminate them. Yeah.
Are we to understand these as cults? Are we to understand them as means for the great European psychologist, Carl Jung, talked about archetypes that we carry around in our heads? How are we to understand this?
Now, Rinpoche Dump, number two can allow me also hla jaminja yore sa. Tangene se na hla dinje mambo yore ki jumsen kare yore sa. Tangene so samlo dane kare kare yore sa. Hla rire kono so jaminja minrawa nipa minrawa tsungi yore. Yamena rin minrawa tsungi yore. Kare ina.
Eri de amare moni sanga yapo tanga yore. Tadi ji la minda ba la mambo ji ona ta rigja ringa ti mar tong me ba mambo yore di. ဒီအောင်နဲ့ကြည့်ကုန်ကုန်တကယ်ပါလေ။ယင်းလာရောက်မိစာမိနောင်နဲ့မိခမ်းစစ်ကြည့်တဲ့မူဝမန္တရပါ။စာမလို့မန္တရပါ။သပ္ပိမန္တရပါ။မေရီရီလာရောက်ကြည့်တဝမန္တရပါ။မဘူယူပါရပါ။စိုးစိုးစိုးစိုးတပါတော့စိုးစိုးစိုးစိုးစာမလို့တော့တံပုတ်ကိုနီတည်တောင်တည်လာရောက်လာမဘူကိုကုန်တည်စာမလို့လာမဘူမရညာနေကျင်တဲ့တည်အောင်တူတည်နေ။မဘူမကုန်ကစာမလို့ကြည့်တဲ့ညီကကိုနေတူတည်နေ။သစိုးစိုးစိုးစိုးကမ်းတော့မူ
of different deities, but the thing, we might have hundreds of deities, but what he said is that all those hundreds of deities can be subsumed within five main classes, and then those five main classes again can be subsumed within one single deity. Now, the reason why we look at that is because we have to understand that every mind has different needs, every mind has different capacities, different aspirations, each one of us has different views and different needs. There are some people who need to have a plethora of deities. There are some who need to have a few less. There are others who think that having so much to work with becomes distractive, and therefore they need to work only with one or maybe two deities. So though there might be great variety, we need to understand that all of them, in a sense, can be subsumed into one single entity. For example, you know, you're somebody who's really wealthy. You observe a person with great wealth, and you see that somehow they have this need to have many houses, many cars, and everything, you know, needs to be plenty of. You know, you see other people, you know, they have lesser needs. So they, you know, they don't have so many houses, not so many cars, you know, fewer things. Actually, the main difference would be in the amount of methods that we utilize. So if you're engaging in a tantric path, it's going to be much more elaborated than if you do it in a sutric way. So in a sutric way, what do? You identify what the mental afflictions are, and for each one of the afflictions, you would have to apply the appropriate antidote. Okay, so it's simple, like this. If you engage in tantra, more or less the principle is the same, but how you're going to apply the antidote, how you're going to do the thing, is going to be much more elaborate and complicated. So if you're practicing lower tantras, you would have to, first of all, meditate on the form of the deity, and then after that you have to meditate on the emptiness of the form of the deity. If you are engaging in higher tantras, you would have to engage in generation and completion stage. And by engaging in this deity meditation and by doing your deity yoga, again you will be trying to apply the antidotes, but you do it within the frame of that visualization and that understanding of the emptiness of the form of the deity. We'll stop here for tonight. Jiva nyamba meba yon goni gon tarvar yo gon ravi gurve jengas tanda diva madu jomoni shanti zogon tenzo jomso chabi zandi vardu denjer jiva nyamba meba yon goni gon tarvar yo gon ravi gurve jengas tanda diva madu jomoni shanti zogon tenzo jomso chabi zandi vardu denjer jiva nyamba meba yon goni gon tarvar yo gon ravi gurve jengas tanda diva madu jomoni shanti zogon tenzo jomso chabi zandi vardu denjer jiva nyamba meba yon goni gon tarvar yo gon ravi gurve jengas tanda diva madu jomoni shanti zogon tenzo jomso chabi zandi vardu denjer jiva nyamba meba yon goni gon tarvar yo gon ravi gurve jengas tanda diva madu jomoni shanti zogon tenzo jomso chabi zandi vardu denjer jiva nyamba meba yon goni gon tarvar yo gon ravi gurve jengas tanda diva madu jomoni